This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
We got 14 minutes after 4 in Central Virginia. It's 83 degrees. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA. This is Charlottesville Right Now. I'm Coy Barefoot. Happy Monday. I hope you had a good weekend. Coming up in the next hour, we'll get our politics fix with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. We'll also talk with David Kirby, the latest on autism. It's an honor to welcome back to the program Professor Daniel Willingham. He's with the University of Virginia, professor of psychology. His most recent book is Why Don't Students Like School? And he's online at danielwillingham.com. Thanks for coming back. How are you?
It's a real pleasure. Thanks very much. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Absolutely. You've done since we've spoken, you've done a ton of interviews about your new book.
I mean,
across the nation, everybody's talking about this book. It's very exciting.
I've been very gratified that the reception. It's been great.
Terrific. So, Dan, you know, what do you think about when summer hits, when it comes to the psychology of students today, of our kids today and learning? What's the summer topic?
Right. So the summer topic is forgetting, right? I mean, from a teacher's perspective, what happens over the summer is kids lose a lot of what they've learned during the course of the year. Every teacher knows this. You just talk to any teacher about, you know, what do you see when the kids come back in late August, early September, and they'll say they don't remember as much as what they knew when they left in June. It's not a big surprise, right?
And it's not just anecdotal. I mean, there's studies that show there's real forgetting going on.
Absolutely. So there are a number of states, and these data go back like 25 or 30 years. There are a number of states or districts where the kids take a test in the fall and the kids take a test in the spring. And so you look at the difference between spring performance and fall performance, and you can figure out more or less how much they've learned during the year. Then you can also take spring performance and performance the following fall and see how much they've forgotten over the summer. The general answer, ballpark, is 2 to 3 months worth of schooling gets forgotten over the summer.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Now it sounds horrible, right? So instead of, you know, you get them back in September the way you left them June 10th, you're getting them back sort of the way they were April 10th or something like that. The slightly good news on this is that they relearn the material much faster than they learned it in the first place. So getting back that 2 months, 3 months might take 3 weeks, a month, something like that. This is a old phenomenon that psychologists have known about forever called savings and relearning.
But that's what teachers are spending the first few weeks of school
doing. Absolutely.
They're getting everybody back up to speed.
Absolutely. So in other words, not the ideal situation, not quite as bad as it first sounds. There's also a really interesting pattern to these data that give us some insight into what's happening during the summer and what's not happening during the summer. One of the big phenomena we see is that there's a difference between middle-class kids and kids from disadvantaged homes in terms of learning loss, and also that it varies with the subject. So everybody, richer kids and poorer kids, loses 2 or 3 months in mathematics, but the wealthier kids lose very little or even gain a little bit in reading. And the kids from disadvantaged homes lose 2.5 or 3 months.
Wow. Well, we're talking with Professor Dan Willingham of the University of Virginia. His most recent book is Why Don't Students Like School? And you can check him out online at danielwillingham.com. We were talking before we went on the air. I was telling you my daughter, who's going to be going into the second grade in the fall, came home with a summer reading list.
Right.
And, you know, these are the books we would like her to read this summer. And, of course, we're working on that list.
Right.
But I guess not every kid gets that list.
Not every kid gets that list. And this is one sort of straightforward and obvious interpretation you would make of the data pattern I just described as well. Kids from middle-class homes are generally reading over the summer. That's true, and that it's more often the case that kids from middle-class homes their homes have more books in them, the parents emphasize reading more, and so forth. I think another big factor is that those kids tend to have richer experiences over the summer than kids from disadvantaged homes do. And this is something we've now realized, that one of the ways you get better at reading is having a broad background knowledge of the world. increases reading comprehension.
Really?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Absolutely. So one of
those trips to the museum resonate.
Absolutely.
It's not just fun for a day. It's not just a field trip.
That's exactly
right. It actually helps reading.
It does. It does.
Wow.
So when you think about it, when you just listen, you're an interviewer. I'm sure you have experts on this show all the time. And some of them, you would like to say, you know what? I'm not an expert. You need to, you know, backpedal a little bit and talk to me.
Always.
Like, yeah, exactly. Right.
Always,
right.
Yeah.
And so what you're essentially saying there is I don't have the background knowledge that you do. And that slows comprehension. Exactly. The same thing happens in reading as happens in listening. If I'm reading something and the writer sort of whips pitching over my head, I'm not going to understand it. And so the more general background knowledge kids have, the more often they will come to a newspaper article, a magazine article, or a paragraph on a reading test where they know something about this.
Interesting.
And it's much easier to comprehend. And so this is another interpretation of why there's this big income difference in wealthier kids and poorer kids in what happens to them over the summer. Kids, even if the wealthier kids aren't reading more books over the summer, they're probably going to the museum, going to the zoo, going to a summer camp, watching more documentaries and so forth, therefore gaining more background knowledge.
Wow. Dan Willingham is a professor of psychology at the University of Virginia, joins us on occasion to talk a little educational psychology, and the phone lines are open, of course, at 977-1070. If you've got a question for Dan, give us a call. So what is the solution? I know that we've been talking for years about students going year-round,
right.
So getting rid of this summer, which may have been there for harvest, you know, sort of a farm thing, antiquated thing. Then it was cheap labor, kids at the amusement park. We need them to work at the amusement park, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, you go to the amusement park now, you don't see these kids from Northern Virginia or from the suburbs. You see, you know, 20-year-olds from Eastern Europe who are working there now.
Right.
And I know there's places in Virginia now that that do go year-round. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there are, you know, as is always the case in education, everything's complicated, right? So if a cognitive psychologist were running things, there's very little doubt that from a memory perspective, you would say it doesn't make any sense to have a 2.5 or 3 month break. We should really have, instead of 1 12-week break, let's have 4 3-week breaks.
Right. Which is usually how the year-round schools do it.
Right. But and then there would still be time to take trips, and you know, you'd have time off of Christmas and probably Easter and so forth. But cognitive psychologists sadly don't run the world. And so, as you say, I mean, part of it is I'm sure is sheer inertia. As you say, this system of a long summer vacation was rooted in an agrarian system where you know, kids needed to be at home
in
the summer so that they could help out with the harvest and so forth. And now I think there are other factors at play. There are some parents who really do like the long vacation, and they feel like, you know, I went to summer camp for 6 weeks or whatever when I was a kid. Or sometimes you run into parents who say, look, I loved kind of being a bum during the summer and not doing that much and riding bikes with my
working
friends.
Working at the pool or, you know.
Exactly. It didn't hurt me. And so there's a lot of inertia associated with it.
So we may see that or we may not see it. But it's if we do see it here in Central Virginia, it would have been a long time coming.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking with Professor Dan Willingham of the University of Virginia. Clarabelle's on line one. Clarabelle, you're on with Dan. You go right ahead.
Coy, thank you, and Professor Willingham, this is just such an incredibly interesting topic, and certainly we need to promote education. So I thank you for being there, and thank you for having him. But I'd like to ask a question about the unfortunate amongst us who have trouble with the written word, and because I'm actively interested, engaged with recording for the blind and dyslexic, I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about how important it is to get alternate learning experiences for people who have trouble with the written word and getting these children diagnosed. I hate to use that word because then it makes it sound like an illness. It's not an illness. But at least for students and children and parents and teachers to be aware that some people really don't deal with the written word as well as they do with verbal or auditory. It seems to be lacking. A lot of students in schools really don't pick up on that early.
Yeah, it's a great topic. Thanks, Clarabelle.
It is, and it is terribly difficult because it's There are different ways of thinking about how to identify kids who are having trouble with reading, and it's very controversial right now. And part of it is, as you say, at what point do you want to put a kid into a situation where there are special services being offered? If you wait too long, that can really have very negative impact on the child, because the child will see themselves as someone who is not a reader and can't read. And we know from other studies that kids who see themselves that way predictably don't read and fall farther and farther behind, and the problem just gets exacerbated. On the other hand, if you identify that child really early, you may have made a mistake. You may be slapping a label on that child, and that can have negative consequences also. So I think there are a lot of educators who are very, very concerned with the problem that you're identifying. I think the bottom line for parents is to really monitor this situation closely, work closely with your child's teacher, and really consider yourselves a team to identify whether or not the child is having difficulty.
Clarabelle, thank you so much for the call. We're talking with Dan Willingham of the University of Virginia, professor of psychology. He's online at danielwillingham.com, and his most recent book is Why Don't Students Like School? You mentioned parents. What can parents do during the summertime, besides the obvious, I guess, which is sitting with your child, reading with your child, encouraging reading, take trips to the library, and now we learn trips to the zoo, trips to the museum.
Exactly.
That's,
yeah.
You know, we should be doing that as well.
Wow, that was great advice, Coy. I mean, that's unattributable. Sure, I mean, I think this is really where it is a question of values, you know, and people have asked me in the past, so should parents be doing something with their child by way of education over the summer? And I say it really depends on what your goals and values are. If you feel like it's absolutely essential that my child squeeze everything out of, you know, squeeze every academic possibility out of every moment, then of course they should be doing things during the summer because they are forgetting. And there are terrific materials available at local bookstores where you can work with your child and so on. If, on the other hand, you feel like, you know what, life is not just about academics and, you know, riding bikes with your friends and going to the pool and all that, that's hugely important to me and really develop me socially and so forth, then great, do that. If you want to strike a middle ground, which is what I think most parents want to do, you can do some of each, right? And so absolutely, encourage your child to read, go with your child to the library and the bookstore, help them locate things that are age appropriate. We'll stretch them a little bit, but also they'll find our fun. And then again, crucially, as you said, do these activities and have a little bit of educational content. When you go to the zoo, read the information placards. Don't just look at the animals, which is, of course, quite fun, right? And so, you know, sort of be looking for opportunities, sort of make it a habit of mind that when we're out doing fun things, we try and learn a little something,
right,
too.
When I went with the field trip with my daughter's school to the National Zoo, they had a worksheet they had to fill out. Well, it didn't take the whole time we were there, but
right.
A worksheet for like two of the exhibits that taught them how to look for information on the little placard,
right,
whether it was weight or what they eat or where they can be found in the world. And they had to fill it out. They had to draw a picture. And I realized as we were doing it how fantastic that is, because it really teaches them that there's more there than just looking at the animal.
Right.
There's a lot of information on these cards that you can get.
Absolutely.
And they learn to explore those big cards just as much as they were exploring the, you know, the world around them with the animal there.
And yeah, and a lot of information they can glean just by looking at the animal. And I think what's so important is that kind of thing can appear to the child as sort of drudgery and something I have to do, or properly handled, it can appear like a treasure hunt and something that's really fun and that they can work on together.
Absolutely. Dan, we had a caller off air saying that she was a Sunday school teacher and tried to teach to the child's developmental level. And does that practice have any merit, sort of teaching to where the child is down to the child?
Yeah, I mean, at one level, absolutely. The idea and is very intuitive, right, and makes sense that you can't present material that's completely over the child's head where they lack any sort of background knowledge and understanding.
You got to go to where they are.
Exactly. On the other hand, the idea of developmentally appropriate practice has been a little bit overdone. And the idea that kids, for example, can't think abstractly, I've read that in various places, which is clearly wrong. I mean, even very small children are able to think abstractly. It just depends on about what they are asked to think abstractly and whether they are ready for it in terms of having the right background knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel Willingham, he's online at danielwillingham.com. Check out his latest book, Why Don't Students Like School? And we'll look forward to you joining us again.
Thanks, Coy.
Real soon. Thanks so much, Dan.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.